Welcome to Mission Critical, a podcast about the big picture, the purpose, and the values that drive today's most game-changing companies, entrepreneurs, and leaders. I'm your host, Lance Chung, Editor-in-Chief of Glory Media, and I'll be introducing you to a group of brilliant minds who are making an impact on the world and forging the path ahead. While they may all be very different from each other, the question remains the same. What's your mission?
Hi, Janet. How are you?
Hi, Lance. I'm doing great. How are you?
Good. I'm so excited to be here in this beautiful space with you. This is one of my favorite restaurants that you have, just from, obviously from a food standpoint, but from like an architectural design standpoint, it's the whole shebang, you know?
Thank you. Grazie, Demetrio.
Thank you.
Demetrio's been with me 28 years.
Oh, my goodness.
Just saying.
Yes.
Family.
Yeah. Family, exactly.
Gusto 501, I think it's a special building, a special restaurant.
So it's a beautiful day. Are you a breakfast kind of gal? And what do you usually start? What do you usually make for yourself? Yeah, to start yourself off and set yourself up for success for the day.
Would you believe I've been intermittent fasting for 7 years and I stopped breakfast altogether. I went down to 2 meals a day.
Okay.
For my lifestyle, that if I want to eat at night and check out restaurants or do tasting menus, it kind of just opens up the calorie window.
And then I need to try that.
But I abruptly stopped a week ago.
Okay.
And I started to eat breakfast again.
Right. Was there a specific reason for that?
It's kind of a long story. It's so long and boring. But I all of a sudden just like, you know what? I eat breakfast again. And I love having eggs, bacon, eggs, avocado.
Yeah.
And back to like having a big breakfast.
You know what? Treat yourself.
I know. I just, you know what? There's no rules in life.
Yes, truly.
I keep changing it. But I always start with a double espresso. And I might wait a bit. I might wait an hour or two to eat.
Okay.
But I always have a double espresso.
That's the breakfast.
Yeah. That's really the breakfast. The breakfast of champions.
Truly, truly. I wanted to talk to you about, I mean, like, food is such a beautiful universal language, because no matter where you are, you know, what kind of background you come from, whatever the circumstances, like, food is, there's something to be said about the language of food. And obviously you are an expert in that language. You're very, you know, fluent in that language. What does it mean to break bread and be at a table together with other customers in a restaurant, your family, or friends? Like, what does that notion of breaking bread mean to you?
Well, I'm half Italian, but I almost feel about 100% Italian. And I lived in Rome for 8 years, where culturally, it's really one of the most important things in life to sit down and break bread with friends and family. And I've always held those traditions wherever I live in the world. So I came back to Toronto, and no matter what, I stop everything to have a hot lunch, whether it's out or I'm home cooking by myself or gathering, you know, with friends and family. And I love also entertaining, feeding people, nourishing people. I don't have children, but this is my way of nurturing, cooking for people, cooking for my loved ones. So it's so important to me. And obviously it's what I do for a living. I mean, I've only ever done restaurants and hospitality. So it runs through my blood in a very, very honest and serious way.
You're nourishing people literally, but also figuratively too, by just being able to bring people together, right? Through restaurants and through your own home as well too. I heard you're a fan of dinner parties as well. Bringing friends together.
I love hosting dinner parties.
Yeah.
And, you know, cooking. Sometimes, you know, it's a little bit hard doing it all on your own. So I love sometimes inviting a couple of friends who love to cook as well. That's when I have the most fun, when I can share the cooking a little bit.
Yeah.
And the cooking and the cleanup. But I think it's the most memorable thing that we do in our lives, to sit around with friends and eat good food. And isn't a home-cooked meal the best thing? Even if I'm in the restaurant business, when you go to someone's home and they cook you a home-cooked meal, I mean, do you not...
It's different.
Doesn't it?
It's differently, yeah, 100%.
I mean, We love going out, but yeah. home cook nothing like a home cooked meal.
Both things can exist and be true and be yeah. and be appreciated,
yes,
right?
Yes.
You know, talking about your note about like being Italian and like food is such an important presence in your life. I'm Korean, and that is also like a huge important part of our culture and life. You know, growing up for me, the kitchen was such a crucial, important, pivotal part of the home. And I remember like some of my earliest formative memories was watching like my grandmother's, and we call them hanmanis, making kimchi in like these huge like steel bowls, and like that was like my earliest memories that around the kitchen that really kind of helped inform a lot of my perspective moving forward in life. What is your most cherished memory around food that has really contributed to your overall perspective as a restaurateur and also just a food lover in general?
Really, it was, you know, all these meals that my nonna, my grandmother, would make in Italy, and that she taught my father. My father was an avid cook as well. He was as good as a chef, and my Italian father then teaching our German mother how to cook very authentic homemade food. But, you know, it's just, I have this memory of this, it's a rigatoni alla matriciana. It's a kind of a classic Roman Italian pasta dish that my nonna taught my father, taught my mother. Then I moved to Italy, and then I called my mother up and asked her for the recipe. And that became the first dish that I ever really cooked for myself. And to this day, it's my friend's favorite. It's my favorite dish. So it's this one Italian pasta dish that for me is just, that's, you know, the epitome of everything with my Italian cooking.
Yeah. When do you think you discovered your point of view as a restaurateur and just as someone that loves to make food? Is that something that has been ingrained in you since, you know, growing up in an Italian household, or is it something that you've discovered along the way?
Definitely growing up and eating well and eating, you know, hot meals, home-cooked meals every single day, and friends asking to come over to have a hot lunch where, you know, some of my friends were latchkey kids, and I would go to their home, and there would be a can of, like, Chef Boyardee and, or whatever, a can of something, and a can opener, and it was so foreign to me, and, you know, I just thought everyone had hot-cooked meals every day for them, which it was a privilege. So it was ingrained in me to eat well when I was a kid. Then when I moved to Italy and I didn't have money as a student, I cooked for myself a lot. Then cooking for friends telling me I should open up a restaurant, but it was never in my mind that I would do that. And then after university, I opened a restaurant, and it's the only thing that I've ever done really in my life. I always had side jobs, but it's really, like, it's my life. And in every aspect of it.
Like just ingrained in your DNA.
Professionally and personally. I'm food.
Yeah. You know, so many of your restaurants make very intentional decisions to really honor the craftsmanship behind the food, the dishes that are being made. You know, things like pasta, much of which can be really traced back to like the matriarchs and the women of Italian households. What role do you think... And so with all that in mind, what role do you think food plays in really preserving culture? Because, you know, when it comes to, like, even specific, like, noodle shapes and everything, those are so regional and specific to specific parts of the country and could be dying out in terms of how they're made. So how do you think that how do you think food helps to preserve culture?
Well, when we're speaking specifically of the dying art of handmade pasta, and I have this restaurant in Los Angeles called Felix, and it's all been built around this dying art of handmade pasta. And my chef and my partner, Evan Funky, I don't know if you know, but this Netflix show.
I just saw it.
Yeah, noodles.
It's really good.
he's featured in this.
Yeah.
And it's so labor intensive. And like you were mentioning, even shapes that are like specific to maybe one little tiny town in Puglia or something. How are these traditions going to be carried on? It is a dying art, so I feel so proud that I'm involved I mean, it's Evan Funky, my partner and my chef, who's carrying on this tradition to try and keep it alive. But certain things, as we progress, you know, they're gonna naturally die off. Mm-hmm. So,
I guess like restaurants are almost like you could almost think of restaurants as like, I don't want to say like museums, but like things that are preserving culture, but people are living through it versus, you know, walking through a gallery or museum and they're able to experience history in a lot of ways, which is, I think, is so interesting and beautiful.
Yeah, and, you know, not every restaurant is doing that, but there are definitely some very special restaurants out there that are carrying on traditions and that really that it's art and it's a dying art for many things, things that are labor intensive.
Yeah, exactly. With the world that we live in, everything's about efficiency.
And it's also too expensive to do it.
Yeah. What do you think is your responsibility, you know, building on that, what do you think is your responsibility as a restaurateur to keep tradition alive while also embracing creativity and innovation? Like, what's the balance between honoring tradition and also pushing boundaries and also creating something new?
You know, every project for me has been so different. And let's say Felix in Los Angeles, I built a brand around a chef. And that is his craft, his art is handmade pasta. So in becoming partners with him, we're really preserving that tradition, and it makes me very proud. Other restaurants, I'm really creating a neighborhood restaurant. I'm looking to be a fixture in a neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And mainly I'm trying to give, like, good value food to people. And it is the balance of so many different things. Sometimes it's very, you know, it's a creative thing. It's a, what does the neighborhood need? At the end of the day, we have to survive and we have to make money. At the end of the day, it boils down to business. We have to be around for a long time. You know, my first restaurant I opened up 28 years ago, Nervosa in Yorkville. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's still running 28 years later. So I'm proud of that fact, and that's a business fact. I've been there for 28 years, and I'm proud of that fact.
Yeah, I definitely want to, you know, come back to that for sure. But first, you were an actor at one point in your life.
Oh, you did some research.
In the Godfather trilogy, which our team is very impressed by. In what ways do you think restaurants mimic, like, theater and performance, if any, and do you draw anything from that part of your life into your life now as a restaurateur?
I definitely do. When I basically create a restaurant, you know, I look at restaurants like making a film, and it's really going to be what's the atmosphere, what's the feeling, the lighting, you know, and also, like, does the food go with the atmosphere? Everything has to fit together as if you're making a movie. Mm. You're really telling a story when you open up a restaurant. If you want to be true to the brand and give people a special feeling, you have to think everything through. You know, food, atmosphere, lighting, music, it all plays a part in how people are going to feel. You're giving people an experience, much like a film would give people an experience and tell a story.
Yeah.
So I just think of film all the time when I'm creating a restaurant.
Right, and you're, instead of like a lead actor, I guess you have a lead dish or the talent that's working behind, you know, backstage to create and set the stage for these beautiful works of art that you're creating. And also it is beautiful in that there is kind of like a choreography and a dance between able to balance like just one evening, I imagine, and the flow of an evening and making sure that runs smooth and well.
Yeah, it's all kind of orchestrated, you know, in a way.
Yeah, yeah. we were talking about this a little bit earlier, your father. So your father did not want you to go into the restaurant industry originally, and, you know, knowing how hard it was, and even stopped speaking to you for a year when you decided to forge ahead. Was there a specific moment when you knew you wanted to dedicate your life to food and hospitality, knowing that, you know, this was not a direction that your family wanted you to go in originally?
Yeah, and I think it might be similar with, you know, your background and your culture, but Italians traditionally had kids to help work on the farm. That you had kids to help you work. And my father, you know, entrepreneur, created his company. and he was very upset that he had three daughters, but he wanted sons to come into his company. And I did grow up very young working for him, but at a certain point, I couldn't sit at a desk. At the end of the day, it was a little bit of a desk job, and I just knew I couldn't do it. And I just had to, I knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur, so my father instilled that in me. He instilled the basically passion for working for yourself. And so I knew that, and I do believe you have to have an entrepreneurial spirit. So when the restaurant business fell into my lap. It's a long story. We don't have time for how that all started, but it did fall in my lap. It wasn't anything that was premeditated. I was asked to be a partner at Nervosa, and 2 weeks later I was in the restaurant business. And, you know, my father was upset, but I knew that in time he would have to understand that I had to live my own life. And I had to break these traditions of culturally these expectations. Everyone has to be free to live their own lives. So I always knew that, and I was like, you know what? My father's going to come around. And one day when we had that heart-to-heart, when he finally started speaking to me, I understood that it came from love, that he said, listen, I thought I built something great for you, and you wouldn't have to work this hard. He goes, it really bothered me to see you work 16 hours a day in the restaurant business, whereas I was having so much fun, you know, being on the floor and not sitting at a desk. So once we had that, you know, that open communication, we could both like walk on, and I could live my life, and everyone has to be left alone to live their own lives.
Yeah, make their own decisions. What lessons from that early part of your career do you still, are lessons that still guide you in your day-to-day today?
I think that we shouldn't be afraid of hard work. And, you know, my father didn't like to see me work 16 hours a day. And I think that nothing worthwhile comes easy. And if I would do it all over again, I had to work every position in my restaurant to create, I think, a very strong company. I don't know, you know, what I should build for a bartender, a busboy, whatever, unless I've worked those positions and I see, you know, how to make my employees happy, really. I worked in these positions, so I know what I wanted. I wanted to be treated well. So I think there's, you know, I look back and I think I did everything right, and there's no overnight success. I think it's hard. I think people want things a little too fast. And it's
especially
okay
in the social media era.
In the era that we're in today, you know, you want to be famous, you know, TikTok famous in a day, one viral video, and, you know, that's your life. And I don't prescribe to that. I think that, you know, I've been building my company very slowly. Today people go, wow, you've got 14 restaurants. Yeah, over 28 years. It was actually a slow build.
Yeah, didn't happen overnight.
No, and I'm okay with that.
What do you think are the core tenets of entrepreneurship? Because that has been such a through line in your life, even as a young child, and obviously today, and with your siblings as well. What are, like, what sets the foundation for if you want to be an entrepreneur?
I mean, you know, you cannot be risk averse. You have to be able to, you know, roll the dice and go for it. And everything as an entrepreneur just, you know, relies on you. And I think that you're born to be able to kind of take that risk and feel okay with that. And other people need to just know that they're getting a paycheck. And I think there's I really believe there's, it's this, like, there's one road and there's another road. And I just see it in people. And I think you have to be willing to work around the clock sometimes. And there's nothing wrong with that. Take all the risk and be willing to lose it all. And when I started, a lot of people were thinking that the risk was too much for me. And I was so young, and I said, what am I afraid of? Like, why are you telling me I should be afraid? And they're like, you could lose it all. And I was like, I don't have anything. And if I lose it all, I'll start again. In the beginning, you can actually roll the dice. Maybe now, later on in life, you might have more things to lose. You might be, I might be thinking twice. In the beginning, who cares? Go for it.
You were very savvy as well at the start of your career, and had the goal of owning the real estate that your restaurants were in. It's a very different real estate landscape today, I imagine, in Toronto specifically. But how do you think restaurateurs can establish a sense of or establish their locus of control and kind of be able to manage a little bit of stability and have that mindset of creating that stability today?
You know, again, when I started at Nervosa in Yorkville, I leased the building. But when I, a few years into leasing it and dealing with a landlord, and Nervosa in Yorkville is a very good location, and I thought the smartest thing I could do is save my money and own the corner of Yorkville and Bel Air. But that took me 10 years of selling margarita pizzas and saving my money and living below my means. I really made a lot of sacrifices so I could make bigger moves in life. I rented a small little place where I lived, saved my money, and then I bought the corner of Yorkville and Bel Air. That took me 10 years of saving money. And I bought a little bit over market value. People thought I was crazy. Now they look back and they go, this was the best move that you made in your life. So for me, it was important to build foundation so I could take more risks later on in life. And you don't have to own like every building that you, and I certainly don't. I either get into a very strong lease, or if the buy is good, I'll buy a building, and then I can invest more in actually developing the building. So we're sitting here at Gusto 501. You know what? I made a significant investment, but I own the building, and I'm going to be here forever, hopefully.
Yeah. On that note, you know, a lot of your restaurants are neighborhood driven. We're here on the East End, Toronto, in
Corktown.
Corktown. And, you know, so many of your restaurants and locations are, you think of the neighborhoods that they're in as well. Why has that been such an important part of your perspective and strategy?
Well, location, location, location. You know, my first restaurant in Yorkville, a AAA location. And then when I was, you know, more looking to purchase buildings, I was looking for up-and-coming neighborhoods. So Corktown, when I purchased the building, there really wasn't, you know, a restaurant scene here, much of a restaurant scene. And maybe I was one of the first. Now we have some more restaurants coming into the neighborhood. So I could buy a building at a better value and also invest. And I can sit tight and wait for the neighborhood to kind of build up around me. So it depends on what I'm doing, buying, I'm leasing. When I went to Los Angeles, I had my mind set on opening on one street, Abbot Kinney, in Venice, which was just the street that I wanted to be on. And I felt, you know, was and is a AAA location. So it depends on what I'm doing. So it's either I go to a AAA location, buy, lease, or go into a newer neighborhood that's going to develop over time.
Yeah, long-term vision.
More long-term vision.
Yeah. When you think about creating a location, or even your existing location, and like you get into the mindset of your diner that walks through the door, what do you hope that they get in terms of an experience? Like, what creates a beautiful, memorable dining experience?
I think people come back to restaurants that have soul. And, you know, you want to feel like you're coming into someone's home is what I would like to equate it to. Therefore, I look to hire usually basically general managers that have, like, give the feeling that they own the restaurant. And a lot of my general managers have been with me for, you know, since the beginning for many, many years, because that was the role that I would do in my first restaurant. I was the owner. I was taking care of people. I was treating them like they're coming into my home. But now when you grow your business, I have to choose a team of people that treat it like it's their home and then give people that feeling. And, you know, we also train people when a customer walks in the door, I say, like, pretend they have a sign on their forehead that says, make me feel special. So when you, like, everyone that comes in there, that you're taking care of them, like, as if they're coming into your home, as you would, right? If someone would come into your home, oh, my God, welcome, come, sit, you know, let me take your coat.
Yes.
We're gonna take care of you.
Yeah. Hospitality.
Hospitality.
Yeah. You know, building on that, you're talking about kind of some of the qualities that you look for when you're hiring your GMs. A lot of, you know, some of your restaurants are also very chef-driven and collaborative, too. What qualities do you look for when selecting chefs and collaborators to be a part of your restaurants? And how do you foster that culture of excellence? And I guess, like, warmth, too, that personal feeling.
all of my restaurants are quite different. I have all these like one-off restaurants. So whether I'm in partnership with Jeff Inouye Regular for the Thai restaurant group that we have. So we have Pai, Pai Downtown, Pai Uptown, Kin, all these different restaurants. And really, it's for me, when I'm in partnership with these uber talented chefs, you know, it's building a brand around them. So, you know, we built a brand around Jeff and Nui as a couple, and you know, Nui's cooking. So everything is put through the filter of her. We just, you know, she's really our queen, and we're building a brand around her. And also with you know, Evan Funky at Felix, it's really, you know, everything from the decor to, you know, he's doing the menu. The location that we chose, everything was built thinking about Evan Funky, our chef, and we're building a brand around him, and he does the menu, and I'm not going to say anything about the food. Other restaurants, I'm actually writing out the menu. These neighborhood restaurants that I have, Gusto 101, Nervosa, I write out the menu, and, you know, we have these great chefs, but, you know, it's more driven to be this neighborhood, good value, volume restaurant. So each restaurant is really going to be quite different how we treat it and how we build out the brand.
Yeah. I've noticed, you know, a little bit of a through line as well with some of your chef-driven restaurants where you're giving a chance to these chefs to achieve a second chance at glory as well. You've got Nui and Jeff at Pai, Evan Funky at Felix, Rob Gentile at Stella. Is that a coincidence or is that something... Is that intentional? What's your perspective on that?
You know, it ended up being a coincidence, but it's something that I like when a chef maybe has been progressing and they face something that could be looked at as like a setback. Sometimes people could look at it as a failure. Yeah. When they come back and they look at it as a second chance, sometimes their last chance. I think that there is a drive in these chefs that is taken up a notch. And
yeah.
I actually like that. I like that energy. And sometimes you have a step back. It's you know, a little dose of humility as well. It all makes for, I think, potential for more success.
Yeah.
That second time around.
Yeah. There's a hunger and maybe something to prove as well, too, whether it's to themselves or to the world, the community, but there is...
100%.
Yeah.
It's a hunger and something to prove, and I like that energy.
Yeah. Good energy.
And I'm like, I'm going to support that.
We like
Let's
that
go.
Vibe. And it's worked
like
out really
vibe.
Well for you.
There's a theme right now, but it's been a coincidence, but I love it.
Mm-mm.
I love that energy.
What do you think is, you know, with that in mind, you know, having been out of the pandemic a few years now, what is something that you wish everyone...
Out of the pandemic a few years now. I feel like we're just coming out of it.
Fair.
Traumatized.
What do you think is something that you wish everyone knew about running a restaurant business? Because I think people are very sensitive, obviously, now to price... to experience. Expectations are different because of social media, but people don't really understand what happens in like the underbelly of running a restaurant business. And so what do you think is something that you wish everyone just had a better understanding of?
When I started 28 years ago, my background is I study business. So I have my master's degree in business. And I think it's very important to really not be afraid of numbers and that the profit margins are so slim in the restaurant business. And if your food costs or your labor costs bump up just a little bit, guess what? At the end of the year, you're not making money. And we know that 50% of restaurants are going to be closed within 5 years of opening. It's a high-risk business. When I started 28 years ago, it was a lot easier. After COVID, I would now for the first time say, this business, this industry is really hard.
Yeah.
It's really hard. Everything has gone up. So your food costs have gone up. Your minimum wage has gone up. And people are feeling the economic crunch. So you better be bringing something of value to people. Before you could, you know, you could get by and, you know, you could survive a little bit. It was a little bit easier back in the day. Now it was like, wow, you better be good with numbers.
Yeah.
You better be watching and monitoring your numbers daily, which is what we do.
So you are a judge on Top Chef Canada. what qualities do you think stand out to you the most when you're judging the contestants? And is there a specific trait or skill that you believe is really essential to becoming a top chef?
Well, for me as a judge, what skills do I need to be a judge?
What am I looking for
in contestants?
Yeah. As a reflection of the real world, too.
Listen, Top Chef Canada, the Top Chef franchise, you know, it's not about you're a great chef cooking one particular type of cuisine.
Yeah.
You're thrown into all sorts of different challenges. So it ends up, you know, you have to be versatile. You have to be able to, I mean, you may be the best chef at Top Chef Canada, but you have one challenge and you might have a partnership and your partner does something and all of a sudden you lose a challenge. So, you know, you've got to be versatile. And if you don't know how to do pastry and you're thrown on dessert, and you might lose, but you might be an excellent chef.
Right. In some ways, that's a reflection of the real life, and working in the restaurant industry is being able to have that sense of, like, agility, being able to react and pivot, and, like, because that is, it's never a straight path, I imagine, in this line of work.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to be a better chef. You can be super versatile and pivot and be able to be thrown onto any station.
Right.
You know, you really, I think to do well on Top Chef Canada, you have to be well-rounded. You have to be well-rounded. So people should be practicing in all sorts of what's a dessert going to be for you. Sometimes contestants come on and go, "Well, I don't really do dessert." Well, you got to be prepared to do anything on the show.
And do you think that having that diversity of skills and perspectives ultimately makes a better chef?
I think the more experience you have in every station in your kitchen, you're going to be a better chef for sure.
Yeah. What's the biggest piece of advice, I guess, building on that you give to contestants when it comes to, one, thriving under pressure that is on the show, but also in a kitchen or a restaurant environment, and just delivering excellence within a competition setting?
I would prepare and practice. I would think, like, you know, we've been on enough seasons, you see what's happening. I would do a lot of prep work. I would be practicing things. I would actually be practicing your final, like you're getting to the finals and you know you're going to be just presenting your best work. I would work out that menu in advance. Isn't life all about practice and preparation?
It's like an athlete. An athlete doesn't just show up and compete.
Yeah.
There's so much that goes on, like, leading up to that.
Yeah, and usually those are the ones, the chefs that I see either making it to the finals, the ones that do a lot of prep.
Yeah. And so I guess kind of taking all that into consideration, do you think competing on a show like Top Chef Canada, you know, truly prepares a chef for the realities of the culinary industry, and how do the pressures of the show really compare to the pressures of running a successful restaurant?
I think they're different types of pressure, but it's still pressure, and you have to be able to. The restaurant industry is working under pressure, so there are going to be similarities, and I think that, you know, it can be a fantastic step in the right direction of your career, and you know you're going to be put under the spotlight. So it depends on what you do to translate that into something bigger in your life. And look, the prize money's no joke. I mean, you've got, you know, Top Chef Canada is about $250,000 all in for all the prizes that you could potentially win. I mean, isn't that, like,
makes a even big difference.
Isn't that just good to have that?
And yeah,
it gives you a leg up.
Yeah, absolutely. Looking back on your career, I mean, you've achieved so much, opened up, you know, restaurants in different cities, you're a judge on Top Chef Canada. How have your goals, or how have the goalposts changed for you? Because when you started your career, I imagine your goals were probably different than your goals now, or maybe from a very top level standpoint, they're largely similar, but how have they changed for you or evolved?
COVID has affected, I think, the world in hospitality. And the landscape has really changed now. And I'm not in a massive growth mode anymore. I've been at this 28 years. I'm looking to stabilize my company. Mm-hmm. I'm looking to maximize revenue in all of my restaurants. Just really, really going through COVID has changed me more than anything. I'm looking to scale existing brands. I'm not going to create much new anymore. Mm. I've created enough, and they're all kind of one-offs. Now I'm looking at hopefully scaling Pi. I think Pi is one brand in the group that is scalable. I would love to bring Pi to LA. So I'm looking at taking certain brands, scaling. I do have a dream of opening a restaurant in Rome where I lived for 8 years, and I am in meetings with a group to potentially open up in Rome, and that would be very meaningful to me. So unless it's going to be super meaningful to me as a deep life goal, I'm not building anymore. I'm just at a different stage of my life in general.
Yeah, and you don't have to fix it if it's not broken. Like things have proven to work, and you can focus on. I also imagine that Pi, from like just like a concept and the way that that business is structured, probably is one of the businesses that was able to, I'm making assumptions, but was able to kind of go through COVID through just like a takeout delivery standpoint, because that cuisine and that model is well geared and towards that.
100%.
Yeah.
So anyone who had any type of Asian restaurant, it's just so conducive to delivery.
Yeah.
Pi thrived, and it was really the only restaurant that thrived. Mm. All the other restaurants, Italian food is the worst. You cannot deliver pasta. Okay, you can.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not good. It's not good for the food. We survived. You know, most of the restaurants survived, and all the Thai restaurants really did so well, thrived. Mm-hmm.
What's something that keeps you passionate about cooking and building restaurants after the career, after what you've already achieved? Have you ever felt like jaded at any point, or do you still feel like you do have that like hunger?
The hunger has changed, but what I do know in life for sure is that we do need challenges in life to be happy. And a challenge could be, I'm going to improve my golf game. I don't know what your challenge is going to be in life, but I really know that, you know, life, you have to have passion, purpose, you know, it's a reason for living. So I need challenges, but my challenges have changed a little bit. So it might be, I want to scale an existing brand. My challenge might be, I want to open up in Europe. Like I want to go to another continent now.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exciting.
You know, that would push me and excite me. So you know, it's just me independently what I need in my life. So but I am changing. I don't want to develop something from scratch again. I'm Stella in West Hollywood.
Yeah.
That's been the one that we opened up 7 months ago. And again, beautiful. Creating everything, like the branding, like the location, the interior design. It's so exhausting and all consuming. I've done it, and I'm not creating. I've done it enough, and I'm proud.
Yeah.
But I don't want that type of challenge anymore in my life.
I think that's very fair. What is something that you would say to the Janet that was entering Nervosa for the first time on day one? What's something that you would like to say to her, whether it's a piece of advice or anything?
I was in a miserable partnership at Nervosa, and I would say that to that Janet, you know, stand up for yourself sooner. It was a bit of this relationship that was toxic. I had a toxic partnership. And I let it go on far too long. And I would say to that Janet, stand up for yourself sooner.
I love that. Last question. What are you still hungry for, and what do you still crave in terms of new adventures? Doesn't it have to be from a business standpoint? I heard you're great at tennis and have a lot of like great hobbies and everything. What do you still have appetite for? Are there any kind of like Everest that you still want to conquer, even within your own personal life?
Yes, I love doing TV. I love doing Top Chef. I think I would love to do more TV. I would love to write a book. I think that it could be an interesting book, as I'm, you know, a female in a male-dominated industry. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I feel like I have some wisdom to share. I feel like it could be like a soft help book, maybe also with some recipes, the cookbook. I'm thinking about books, a little bit more TV. And I want to get back to, I was an avid traveler, and I'm going to get back to more traveling. I just got back 3 weeks in Europe, and
beautiful.
I just want to a little bit more freedom and, you know, get always related to food, but yeah. I want to branch out a little bit more and do some different things.
This is the entrepreneurial spirit in you, just new adventures.
Yeah, new adventures, new challenges. You know, I just want to enjoy life. Don't you want to be happy and just enjoy life?
Yes,
but,
absolutely.
You know, we can work hard and, you know, have challenges, and I think that brings a lot of happiness.
Yeah, I love that. Thank you so much for that chat. I loved just chatting with you and learning. And honestly, one of my favorite things to talk about is food and, like, the world around food, because I think it just speaks to so many different things that we can relate to in life. And there's so many lessons to be derived from the food world. So I really enjoyed our chat.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I enjoyed speaking with you as well.
Yeah, thanks so much.
If you enjoyed this episode, we'd really appreciate it if you left a review on Apple Podcasts. Let us know what you liked, who you'd like to see on the show, and anything else you want to share. To keep up to date, subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere else you listen to your podcasts. Until next time, ask yourself, what's your mission?